today as well. And the case will be taken under advisement. Our next case today, be number 042963, Raveling against HarperCollins Publishers. Mr. Tedrow.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you for the honor of appearing before the court this morning. I represent Mrs. Gail Raveling, who one morning not long ago received a phone call from a friend in Chicago saying, "Are you aware your picture and name are appearing in this book entitled Double Deal by a now quite infamous Michael Corbett, who was indeed a double dealer, as we all know from the public record, being both a police official and on the take from the mob?" And she appeared in the book because at one time she was asked by the author to do him a very important and intimate favor, and that is be godmother of his child. She had married into the family very briefly. Only 3 years was she married to his, I believe it was his brother. She gave him this okay that she would be the godmother. She appeared in the day of the sacred event of the christening, obviously had her photo taken, and that was about 2 decades ago. And then, as I say, a short while ago, she got that phone call saying, "You know, your picture's all over probably the world by now, standing next to this fellow." And in a book, in a contextual matter, a book that is nothing but about the degradation of a human being who has sold his soul. It wasn't about doing charitable work for this lyric opera or the Chicago Symphony. It was about the most despicable things imaginable. And on a page where there was another photograph, purportedly, of the deceased Mrs. Masters in the trunk of her automobile being hauled out of the sanitary canal on the same page. Now, there is nothing in the book whatsoever in writing that refers to my client. There is nothing whatsoever. It is conceded. She filed the lawsuit based upon having been cast in a highly offensive false light that any reasonable person would find highly offensive. She had done a good deed, participating in a sacred event a long time ago, and here she's appearing in this kind of trash. A book that can only appeal to people who are interested in such degradation for whatever titillating purposes you can imagine.
Now, when the reference in the book is that this is the one of the christening was one of the proudest moments of his life, and then there's this picture, obviously, at what they call a christening, then is that... You say they should have used another picture or something. This isn't representative of the, I guess, what he calls the proudest moment of his life?
Oh, it's certainly representative. There's no doubt about it. It was totally gratuitous for his own self-service, obviously. There is
he's the one that says this is one of the proudest moments of his life. Okay, this depicts that moment.
That moment.
Now, she happens to be in the picture. Is there some reason he put her in the picture instead of somebody else? Is that what you're saying? Is there some reason why this is a false light effort, I guess?
Well, it's a false light effort because a person will normally only ask someone that's quite close and intimate to you to do something of this nature. This implies that for some reason Mrs. Gail Raveling was very familiar and close to this author, where in fact she was not. And as I stated earlier, she was only even married into this family for 3 years. Then she got a divorce and got out. So that's why it's the contextual matter of having, for the rest of her life, to explain to people, what's this all about? How much did you know about this? What else were you in? Were you involved in anything else? It just goes on and on. For instance, if we had, all due respect to the court, innocent judges appearing in a Gray Lord book, with some convicted Gray Lord judge, For the rest of one's life, I submit, we have to go around explaining that. Why is he in there? Why is she in there? There was absolutely no reason to put this innocent person's picture and name into this type of a book. And that is why she was so highly offended. She asked me to file this suit on her behalf, and we feel she has pled all the basic elements of the Colgus case. Highly offensive, certainly casting false light, because it tarnishes her reputation. She has to explain. And it was done with reckless disregard for what impact it would have on her. The other issue in this case is the order of the court dismissing it. In the court's order, it said, motion to dismiss is granted, period. I relied upon that. It doesn't say case terminated, et cetera, with prejudice, none of those other magic, powerful words. I read the federal rules that said we have an absolute right to file at least a First Amendment complaint. In 30 years of law, I have never been denied the right to file at least a First Amendment complaint. Unless it was controlling and binding precedent the court has used to say, look at this case, look at this statute, it is impossible for you to bring this action. I submit the court did not give us the benefit of the imagination. I submit the court did not put itself into her place. And imagine what it would be like going around explaining yourself for the rest of your life. We believe that the court erred in not only dismissing her original complaint, but certainly in granting us leave to file at least a First Amendment complaint. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Metcalf.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Slade Metcalf. I'm here today on behalf of the appellee, the publisher, HarperCollins. I think it's clear from Mr. Tedrow's presentation this morning that Ms. Raveling clearly is upset about the use of her photograph in this book. No question about that. She's understandably upset, as Mr. Tedrow has articulated to the court this morning. That doesn't give her a viable, valid claim for invasion of privacy through false light publication. It's just not the case here. And if we look at the page on which the photograph appeared, it's clear that there is no falsehood on that page or anywhere else in the book pertaining to Ms. Raveling. None whatsoever. In fact, Mr. Tedrow just acknowledged, as he did in the court below, that the facts set forth in the caption to the photograph are in fact true. My son Joey's christening in 1983 was one of the proudest moments of my life. Here, my sister-in-law, Gail Barone. Ms. Raveling, her name at the time, Gail Barone, was in fact relative by marriage to Mr. Corbett. Goes on to say, cradles him in her arms while Joey's godfather, Sal Bastone, beams into the camera. There's nothing false in that caption as related to this photograph. And as Mr. Tedrow has acknowledged, her name does not appear anywhere else in the book. Her photograph doesn't appear anywhere else in the book. The photograph, which is at the top of the page of the car being pulled out of the canal, has nothing to do with the photograph below. In fact, there's a caption which separates the top photograph from the bottom photograph. So what do we have here in the complaint? Because that's all we're talking about at this point. This is not a motion for summary judgment. What do we have in the complaint as reflected in the page and the book as a whole, because the court is entitled, as we argued below, to consider that on a 12b6 motion. And in point of fact, there is nothing false about this. Nothing false at all. There's merely the embarrassment, the upset that Ms. Raveling has to having her photograph in this book that was taken some years ago. As she acknowledges, she is the woman in the photograph. She's holding Joey. At the time, she was the sister-in-law. All of these facts are true, admitted to be true. And the photograph wasn't just used as a odd piece of art with the book, there is a connection of the photograph to the balance of the book.
Would it make any difference if the photograph were on the slipcover of the book?
No, it would not, Your Honor, because it does. The purpose of the photograph is not to highlight Ms. Ravlin. She happens to be in there. Why is she there? Because she was, in fact, the godmother of this child. And what is the significance of the child? The child is very important to the author, Mr. Corbett, now the late Mr. Corbett, because the child was born with Down syndrome, as the book tells us. And in point of fact, he goes and talks about Joey and how, and his affection for Joey three or four times in the book, and the acknowledgement, the dedication at the beginning of the book is to Joey. So that's the significance of using that photograph. And it so happens it's a nice, there's nothing offensive about the photograph itself, to be sure. So what we've now passed over the falsity question, what is highly offensive about the use of the photograph in the book? Isn't it appropriate to use a photograph of a christening involving the son of the author when the author talks about the son and his affection for the son and his attempts to incorporate and integrate the son into society? These are very important photographs, and it's very significant to have that. The court below did not address the highly offensive aspect of the false light claim, but it's clear, it seems to me, that there is no aspect to the use of this photo that can be deemed to be highly offensive. The third and final element of the false light claim is that there must be some allegation, some pleading of constitutional malice. That's nowhere else. There's nowhere in the complaint that is. The only close wording comes in count three of paragraph 9 of the complaint, where plaintiff says that there was willful and wanton and done with reckless disregard as to the consequences to the plaintiff's reputation among her family and friends. Well, that's reckless disregard as to the consequences. That's not constitutional malice, as the court is aware. Constitutional malice is reckless disregard as to the truth of the publication. And if there, it's acknowledgement that there is no falsity, no falsehood whatsoever, in connection with the use of this photograph, then there certainly couldn't be any constitutional malice, despite the fact that it is not even alleged or pled in this particular complaint. The subsequent motions for reconsideration and for to amend the complaint, I don't think I'll take the court's time to address those. We've done that in our papers. The only thing I would mention is that indeed on the court below issued its initial decision granting the motion to dismiss on February 9th, the following day, and this is in the record at page supplemental appendix page 16, that the court says that the motion is granted terminating case. So it was clear as of February 10th, even though the judgment wasn't entered for about a month later, it was clear at that time that the court below considered this to be a dismissal with prejudice and that the case had been concluded at that time. So from that moment on, the time to file the motion for reconsideration had not yet expired, but indeed the motion to amend the complaint was barred after that time, and certainly the plaintiff did not have grounds to amend the complaint as of right as of that date.
The Rule 58 was filed, though, about a month later, wasn't it?
The Rule 59 motion, Your Honor, was filed on March
sorry,
the 4th.
I'm sorry, the judgment.
The judgment was filed on March 10, Your Honor. Yes, correct. And the court below was unfortunately a little confused, I believe, in the second opinion where he believed that the judgment had been entered on March 10, on February 10, when in fact it was entered on March 10. But it doesn't affect the reality here that the issue as to the subsequent motions filed by plaintiff are reviewed by this court on an abuse of discretion basis, and
well,
clearly the record shows.
I want to clarify, though. The notice of appeal was, I think this Rule 59, whatever it was supposed to be, was actually filed about 6 days before the Rule 58 entry was. Isn't that right?
Yes, you're correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
It was March. It was, and the court below was mistaken on that point.
Yeah,
but
well,
it doesn't affect the equation here.
It's a little bit goofed up, but it does seem to be legitimate appeal. I don't know. It's just a Rule 60B.
We're not arguing that that it's improper appeal before
well,
the court.
Well, you're arguing that it's a 60B, though, right?
We treated it, Your Honor, as if it was a Rule 59 motion.
Okay.
And the court below, in some ways took her to task for treating it that way, because the court below misunderstood that the judgment wasn't filed until March 10th. That was the problem. If there are no more questions, Your Honor, I will sit down. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Metcalf. You have 3.5 minutes, Mr. Tigger.
Very much. First of all, I would just like to deal with the second issue briefly, that the trial court communicated to us, the plaintiff, only that the motion was granted. That is the only communication. Nothing else was contained in its written order. With regard to the context, my learned opposition counsel is a co-author and author of a book of a learned treatise on the principles of false light, and I've referred to it in my memorandum of law, which is part of the record. And counsel himself has written in there that what false light really means under the cases he's digested is that it presents the plaintiff in a distorted light. It does not require the matter published to be defamatory. The primary interest being compensated is harm to injured feelings or mental suffering. That is, injury to reputation is the primary element of damage. Now, there's another aspect from the common law when the term false light was created, we believe. Light is like a light bulb. It shines and casts a shadow. And that shadow that's been cast, or that absence, or that color tone from that light bulb, comes from the entire context of the publication. In other words, to have an innocent person's picture and name just thrust into the heart of something regarding degradation, actions of a sociopath, is what is the false light here. It's not just because a photograph per se in isolation is true. It's the falsity of the entire shadow cast upon her. I thank the court very much.
Thank you, sir. Our thanks to both counsel for their oral arguments today, and the case is going to be taken under advisement.